From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Steve Rysom. In this half hour of Newsmakers, getting into the fields. Area farmers benefited last year from a warm, relatively dry spring that allowed them to begin field work and get planting underway earlier than normal. This year is a different story. The colder, wetter weather so far this spring will likely mean a more traditional growing season this year, according to regional ag specialists, including La Crosse County UW Extension Agriculture Agent Steve Hunziker. In this preview of what's ahead for farmers this year, he told me the first thing on people's minds is, in fact, the wet fields that farmers are faced with.
Certainly the soils are saturated, and we're going to have to see what comes of the flooding that's there, and also what we get for rain and accumulated snow, et cetera, over the next days and weeks. And really, it's going to be when is our dry period going to come so we can start to dry things out and get out in the fields.
I know this is planting season for corn and soybeans. Any other crops that I'm missing on this list?
You could be seeing some small grains going in as well. We may see a little bit of barley if people are putting that in. Some people plant oats as a cover crop or a crop with alfalfa that they might be putting in. So direct seeding alfalfa and oats might be happening. Also, some of the vegetable crops in the central sands will be going in at this time of year, probably into May more than anything else. You could have some of your spring wheat going in the ground as well.
Corn and soybeans are really kind of the two 800-pound gorillas when it comes to crops in Wisconsin?
They really are. They're a crop that continues to grow in the number of acres planted. Typically, we see those acres increase, fluctuate between corn and soybeans depending on the year, but those are two of our predominant crops. Although, you know, we still have some of the small grain crops, which are starting to gain a little bit more interest again, depending on the management that we're doing on the farms. And we're still feeding a number of dairy cows, so alfalfa still tends to be a crop that ranks up there as well.
Let's talk a little bit about corn and soybeans. Growers last year had a pretty darn good year, an unusually good year last year.
That's right. And really, we looked at having pretty ideal conditions for weather-wise and really out of our control as to how the weather comes and goes, but a spring that saw quite a bit of dry weather initially that allowed a lot of the planting to occur, followed by, you know, some important rains, June and July, especially as we came into the end of July, first part of August, we saw some rains that brought us good pollination in the corn crop that led to a pretty good harvest. So, yeah, conditions were good, and then the bushels were there when harvest time came around, which was another benefit to a lot of these farmers. We saw yields that nationwide were probably second and third best, respectively, in corn and soybeans, and Wisconsin set records in both corn and soybean production, both on the on a per bushel basis and also on the amount of bushels produced across all acres.
When the year following a banner year such as last year was, can we expect to see more corn planted, more soybeans planted and such to kind of hopefully capitalize on that success? And I know there's more to it than agreeable weather and such, and I'll touch on that. But are we seeing more acres being planted?
Well, I think there's going to be an anticipation. A lot of our economists are looking at corn acres increasing predominantly because of, yes, good conditions last year, but a favorable price this year as well, at least so far. I think there's going to be a lot of volatility in that market potentially as to where it's going to go and where prices are going to settle at, and little indicators in the market could really change that price back and forth as we go through the season, whether that be weather-related or just small-scale Wisconsin or large-scale national things happening. But corn acres are probably going to be up. That may lead to some decreased acres in soybeans, depending on what they're giving up to put those extra corn acres in.
But soybeans had a good year too, though. It's a matter of what's better of the two betters?
Yeah, really it's just coming down to the decision of what we want to put in there. Soybeans are holding pretty steady right now. I think a lot of that may be a factor as to what South America does. Brazil is a country that we see a lot of double cropping of soybeans, meaning that we're going to get multiple growing crops in a year. And what they do and what's happening in those countries as far as their production might indicate how much demand there is for certain crops here in the United States.
And here in Wisconsin, and of course true with the U.S. as well, there is an unusually high demand for corn and soybeans?
Yeah, I would say especially on the corn side right now, we're really seeing a demand both nationally here in the United States, but also some international demand for the product. China and India are probably two that are importing products from the U.S., especially the corn crop. And whether that demand continues or not is going to set a tone for where our price goes and what our supplies look like. Because right now, corn supply in the United States is a little tighter than we've seen in the past years.
And I've been wondering about that, too. The corn supply, I did not know this until about a month ago. We have a U.S. corn surplus?
We do carry a surplus usually, and what we're seeing, though, is that stock is actually down from what we've carried in the past few years. In fact, our supply-to-use ratio is what they call it, the amount that we have in storage as compared to how much is being used or going out at this point, actually is the lowest it's been since 95, 96. So we're seeing increased use of a product that we have around the similar supply as we've had in past years, which leads to a tighter supply going to be there in the end.
Ethanol?
Ethanol is a player in some of this demand that's going on, but I think price is a driver in it. I think we may have been able to see some exports based on a weaker U.S. dollar for a while being there in the market. And, other factors, simply just the anticipation of continued demand, I think, has led to wanting to put an increased corn crop out there this year.
And in the world of agriculture, corn prices and soybean prices can go south in a matter of a short period of time.
We can see extreme volatility in the market, whether we're talking about corn or soybeans. And I think with the supplies where they're at and production anticipation, there's little indicators that could change that volatility very quickly and turn prices around. It depends on what you want to look at. You can say prices are going to stay favorable and increase, and other arguments are going to show that we have to watch out for that drop in prices as well.
So farmers pretty much have to survive on a guarded optimism.
That's right. Cautiously optimistic might be the word that we work with a lot in the industry right now, whether you're talking about the dairy market or the crop side.
Financially, how big of a gamble is it to put crops into the ground? I mean, if you want to choose a certain amount of acres in an operation, are we talking tens of thousands of dollars going into the ground that's at risk, and we're hoping Mother Nature likes us this year?
That's right. There's a definite risk associated with it, with a hopeful return at the end. And coming into the spring planting season, just like any others, we do have a risk associated with putting that seed into the ground and hoping that we get a return on it. And initially, we're probably looking at hundreds of dollars per acre that we're going to
per
be
acre.
putting into the ground, and that really constitutes a lot of things: seed, pre-harvest costs, labor that we have going in. Really, that can even go down to harvest and drying costs if we want to associate all of that in. And then you take that across your acres that you have, you can easily look at tens, if not hundreds of thousands, depending on how many acres you're running, whether it be 50 or 5,000.
So again, farming, stressful.
It can be, yes, and there's certain pressures throughout the whole year that are gonna lead to that stress and that ability for people to cope. And when we get those good years, such as we saw last year for corn and soybeans, for example, it's refreshing and nice to know that things turn out the way they did.
Given the pricing the way it is on various things, livestock, and of course we're talking about planting here and such, with things being so volatile, do we have many farmers who operate in the black?
Certainly they can, and there are people who are operating in the black, and I think a lot of that will come down to how they're set financially coming into situations where we see the peaks and valleys of the markets affecting us. And you certainly have years where you can get to that, and other years don't look anything like you're going to come close to the black for your operation. So it is variable. I think it's become more volatile, as you said, and trying to make sure that you end up in that area. And there's always with income come expenses and the opportunity to grow or do something different or update equipment or machinery, et cetera. So I think that's a revolving door a little bit of that cash flow.
This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Steve Reisom. We're talking about the crop planting season with Steve Hunziker. He is UW Extension Ag Agent for La Crosse County. Are we seeing a noticeable decrease in the number of acres of farmland? I'll say in La Crosse County, since you're the La Crosse County Ag Agent.
As we look in La Crosse County, we've probably hit a more level line in that. A few years ago, we probably saw acres rapidly coming out. When the economy was good, we saw development and prosperity starting to take some of that land out of production, and whether it be into homes or other businesses or other opportunities that were going on. Currently, we've probably brought that down a lot due to the economy that we're currently in, and we actually may see some acres change over from the standpoint of talking about our CRP programs and re-enrolling in some of these traditional programs that may have been offered. Contracts are coming up. Do we put those back into these conservation reserve programs, or do we look to bring them back into production because, you know, prices are good or whatever reason might bring those back?
And that is kind of what's being explored right now. The CRP, is that Conservation Reserve Program?
That's correct.
Okay.
And what they're looking at is, you know, re-enrolling lands that initially went in maybe 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Depends on what the contracts were and how often they renewed those contracts, you know, and what the opportunity is to use that land for production agriculture again, or is it better for that land to just remain in programs that they currently are enrolled in?
Are farmers well paid to keep those acres environmentally non-touched?
Certainly it's competitive in the market.
It is.
But it really has to come down to, you know, what that land is and how feasible it is to grow production crops on there again. Some of the lands that came out in CRP program have been turned into, you know, woodlots and tree establishments, and those are probably not going to get cut down and put back into, you know, tillable acres again. So it really comes down to the situation that each person is in and how feasible it is to convert.
Getting back to the planting part of it, is there any difference between organic, how the organic farmers, how they plant for planting season with the corn, soybeans, or whatever they favor? Is there much of a difference how they go about doing it?
Technically, when it gets down to the process,
planting
is planting. But some of the decisions and the inputs that they're going to put in are obviously going to be different just based on their style. But really, they're taking a risk whether you're organic or you're conventional in your planting, and you're still putting some inputs into that crop and hoping for a return in the end.
Now I want to touch on what has been a pretty volatile controversy over genetically modified alfalfa, Roundup Ready alfalfa. USDA recently approved the sale of seeds for this planting season. I mean, in theory, they can be bought now?
That's correct. They came out on the market with the hope of being available in February in certain parts of the nation, and will continue to come out as long as that availability is there to continue to sell it. And I think as we look at it, you're correct in stating that, you know, it's been a controversial issue. It's certainly why that got put on hold 3-4 years ago when it initially came out to really look at what are the pros and cons of GMO alfalfa and in this case glyphosate resistant or Roundup Ready resistant alfalfa coming out, and what are the consequences and what are the benefits that are going to be there.
We also have in seeds doing not genetically modified corn, genetically modified soybeans. Is that that's fairly common? That's how we make better, stronger, more robust yields?
It is becoming more common, and it's not only in the United States but also in some of the other countries, and that's some of the concern I think that's out there is, you know, how is this going to be received by other places that we might be exporting product to, and what are other countries doing with it? And certainly they're developing and working on their programs as well, so I think that, you know, can be looked at from a number of different ways when we look at the crops. But yes, it's happening, and certainly it continues to explore. I think it's part of the way that some of our science has seen a potential for us to grow and continue to develop new technologies.
Have we seen similar kind of outpourings of criticism in regards to a genetically modified release as we are now seeing for alfalfa? Has alfalfa been especially controversial, Or is this something that I thought over about a decade ago we saw a similar debate over corn?
Right. And I think to answer the question, as each of these things come up, whether it be alfalfa or some other crop that we start to modify in whatever means or forms, there's certainly going to be questions that people have. And that leads to some of the controversy that comes from which side of the fence, so to speak, you're going to be on with the issue and what you see as issues with it and what you see as positives or benefits from it. And whether we talk about concern over how the seeds are going to establish and could they cross over and are we going to eventually have, all Roundup ready alfalfa out there and there won't be any of the conventional alfalfa that we know of today because of the, change genetically over it. I think those all raise questions that have been looked at and are being studied in detail. And really there's an intricate process that would have to take place for some of this crossover to happen.
I know as an ag agent, I would assume you're kind of the equivalent of Switzerland. You can't really state on one side or another. I take it you've gotten earfuls on both sides of the issue. How do you remain neutral on something like on issues like this?
Well, I think the biggest thing to look at is the facts that are out there on it and bringing those facts forward and what's been tried and what's been tested and understand that there is going to be opposition for it to come out and really look at, what is each person's situation and why do they see it the way it is? There's certainly good questions either side of the fence on this issue, for example, with GMOs. I mean, from a farmer standpoint that is excited about it and wants to use it, are they looking at improving stand quality and being able to, rid themselves of weeds that they never could get rid of before? Reducing possible seeding rates, using less seed to get out there onto the field, reducing costs for that farmer to produce that stand of alfalfa are benefits that they're going to jump at and would love to take an opportunity to be part of. But on the flip side, then, we can really look at things like glyphosate resistance or the Roundup Ready resistance happening in weeds or other products. Is this a good thing? And how are we addressing that as it comes up? And getting back to that point of will everything become Roundup ready, So there's questions on both sides, and I think we have to dive into each of them individually and look at what are the pros and cons to it, knowing that there can be pros and cons to both sides.
Looking out at farm acres in La Crosse County and keeping in mind that of the organic industry and how it is, I always hate to say the word growing because it's always a pun when you're talking about farm issues. But as you look at La Crosse County right now, since you're La Crosse County Extension Ag Agent, do we have more organic in this county, or do we have more, is the correct terminology, conventional farmers?
I think across it we have both. Conventional farming is probably what we're still seeing predominantly across the county, but it would depend on what crops we're talking about too. If we're looking at corn and soybeans, I would say predominantly we have a lot of conventional crops, although, we have organic dairies and other acres that are going into organic land from the production of corn and soybeans. Some of the vegetable crops that we might have here might be a little bit different story on how producers are growing some of the vegetable crops that they have or even some of the fresh produce that we're getting.
Are we seeing fewer acres operated by the smaller farmers and more acres operated by larger farms?
I think the best way to answer that question is to say I don't know that our farm numbers have decreased, but our farm operators have decreased. And by that I mean we have less people running more acres. And so we have seen some conversion out of acres certainly in the area to development or other things that are going on. But overall, I think we're still farming a number of acres. It's just into larger sections or into larger chunks of land that's being operated by less people.
I found this surprising. We do have some tobacco farmers.
We do have some tobacco farmers still. It has been reduced dramatically compared to what we saw just a few years ago in the state, and there's many reasons as to why that's gone out. But there still is a little bit of tobacco that's being grown. A lot of that was dependent on who could find a market once the time came to have the buyout of the tobacco. And those that did find a market, maybe still growing a little bit of tobacco, probably not near the amount that they initially had grown or conventionally grown in the past.
And I've talked to some of the farmers who have these sort of operations, and they're not necessarily pro-smokers or smokers themselves or anything like that. It is a crop.
It still is a crop. You know, it's crops that they can raise, and there's still a market out there for it. And I agree, without getting into the whether you're pro or anti-smoking, I think it is a crop that certainly was a profitable crop for the state of Wisconsin for many years. And for some of the people, it's still a livelihood that they choose to farm in.
What happened to tobacco growers?
Well, I think the biggest thing became the market that was out there and the amount of need for tobacco and tobacco-based products. And so I think we saw when the buyouts came through of some of this land to convert it out of tobacco, that movement really pushed a lot of people out of production, and the markets were lost for it.
With planting season coming up, and this is my final question, anything we should look for? Be careful of slow-driving tractors, but, I mean, anything else we should be looking for when it comes to road safety, or even just looking out in the fields and learning something?
Well, I think you hit it on the head, first of all, for just safety in general. Know that it is going to be a season that is going to be peak time for a lot of our producers and farmers to be out there on the roads with small and large equipment. And we have operators of varying experiences from young to old that are going to be out there. And I think the predictability is always something that we have to have in check. And whether you be the farmer that's out on that road and watching out for other people who are on there, or that passenger in that car or whatever mode of transportation you're out there, watching and working on safety is going to be important again for this season. And you know, the opportunity to learn, I think, is out there. We're a diverse state with the different crops that we are planting across the state. And if you are traveling or moving throughout the state, take the opportunity to stop in and learn more about something that you may not have experienced before, whether that be the cranberry bogs or the snap bean fields in central Wisconsin, to the potato fields, to the traditional corn, soybeans, and alfalfa fields, when you have the opportunity to learn.
Steve Hunziker is an agriculture agent for UW Extension in La Crosse County. And for this week, that is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Steve Reisom. Our production team includes Maureen McCullum, Mary Meenstrup, John Gatto, and our senior news editor and Newsmakers producer, John Davis. Next week, reaction to a recent study assessing the health of Wisconsin counties. And we'll talk to a scientist who's advancing a different theory about the body's immune system. And that is next week on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, you can visit our website, wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse.